was the summer before the real world started, and the deal was we would get to go if we cleaned it up and got it running. That is old Winnebago, and winging a prayer down a 65. Five best friends on four ball ties. I can still see Billy smiling when we finally made it to Talladega. Boys, raise the whiskey in your glass. Now here's to turning up or slowing down in cars that go real fast. We were laughing and living, drinking and wishing and thinking as that checkered flag was waving. Sure would like to stay in Talladega.
All right, Tailgate Talk Show, episode 41. It's 60 degrees, Sunday. For most people, it's a holiday weekend, and we're sitting inside recording a podcast. So, Danny, Arthur, Fisher, all back. Episode 41, I said that already. Big kind of interesting week, I think, in sports. But first things first, what's going on? What's new and exciting?
Not too much. Do you get tomorrow off for the holiday?
Nope.
Me neither. Don't feel bad.
Same here.
I get six holidays a year, and the stretch from New Year's Day to Memorial Day is the longest stretch of the entire year without a day off. It stinks.
I agree.
Fair enough.
But all right. So, speaking of shitty situations, we have an asshole running the country. But, Arthur, you shared this interesting article in GQ of the difference between the vocality of the NBA and its players and coaches and the NFL and its players and coaches when discussing political situations, social situations, you know, obviously the Trump presidency and some policies. Where do we stand on, first and foremost, the quote, stick to sports crowd, the people that get up there and say, you're an athlete, your job is to play sports, and you don't want to hear them talk about any issues whatsoever outside of their world?
I think they're stupid, naive, and it's not only with athletes either. You'd be surprised how many people within media, people on ESPN, Fox News or Fox Sports, NBC Sports, all these guys. I mean, it's not just athletes and coaches, but for these people that say it, I think they're just stupid. I mean, they have a voice. They're American citizens as well. They have the right to vote. They have the right to be upset with things just as much as you and I. So why can't they express themselves, especially when they have a bigger platform than the three of us here on this podcast?
Yeah, Fisher, where do you think, like, especially on the internet? Now, Twitter is a horrible, horrible place. And mostly on Twitter, you see a lot of these people that are like, oh, you know, Colin Kaepernick should stick to sports. You know, he's not good enough to do anything. Or you got guys on the other foot that say, oh, Tom Brady, American hero and a Trump supporter, he could say whatever he wants. Is there a double standard based on your political view?
There is a double standard, but I wish sports analysts would keep their political biasness and opinions to themselves off of Twitter. I don't follow them on Twitter to hear their opinions on the president, Donald Trump. I follow them on Twitter to know what's going on around the world of sports. So I think they should lay off the politics on Twitter and stick to what they're being paid to do, and that's report the sports news and tell us so-and-so signed a multi-year contract with such-and-such team and all that fun stuff. Don't sit there and tweet how you hate Donald Trump and you think, you know, his recent speech was dooming the country. I don't care. I don't go to Twitter to read that off you.
I'm so happy you said that, because I could not disagree more. I think that Twitter is the perfect outlet for people like that are sports reporters to share their views and their opinions on the issues. Now, if they went into the New York Times and wrote an article in the main section of the New York Times talking about policy, as opposed to writing an article about the Yankees or the Giants or whatever in the sports section, that's where I have an issue. But on Twitter, that is their 100% right to share their political thoughts or their opinions on something that happened, because that they're free to express what they want to say there, as long as it fits within company guidelines.
And you're right; it is their right to say it, but it's just a personal belief of mine that I don't follow them on Twitter to read what they have to say about the president.
And that's fine, and I respect that point of view. There are a lot of people that say a lot of stupid things on Twitter, myself included, that people probably aren't like, I don't follow you to hear this stuff. So that I can agree with. But I think that Twitter provides that outlet to where athletes, coaches, reporters, other celebrities, whoever, can share their opinions, because we know, with the example of like Meryl Streep, when they get in front of a camera and say something, all of a sudden they become public enemy number one to whoever disagrees with what they say. Arthur?
I can't believe I'm actually agreeing with Danny on this, but yeah, I mean, I was actually just about to ask you, Fish. Now, these reporters, these people that you follow, you know, you're big in the NFL, so I'm assuming Adam Schefter is one of your big follows. Adam Schefter's doing his job 24/7. He's on top of it, but he's also educated enough to say, this isn't right. This isn't right in the political world. Why is it not okay for him to express that?
Actually, I haven't really seen Adam Schefter with any political posts.
I was just using him as an example. But I'm saying, you know, the people that you follow, for the most part, they're still doing their job. They're on top of it, you know, with the latest free agencies and signings and what's going on outside the offseason, what's going on in the in-season. But why can't they express themselves? Why can't they have some downtime and say, wow, I really don't like where this is going with the immigration ban and, you know, everything of the sort? Why can't they express themselves?
Well, they can. I just wish they wouldn't. Like I said, I don't follow them on Twitter to read about the politics. But you're right. They are people as well, and they have a right to express themselves. Of course, I usually just scroll past it anyways, like I do on all forms of social media, because since October, every single post on social media has been nothing but about President Trump and how everybody hates him.
Well, he's a douchebag.
Right.
I'm like that thing that you see. This is Bob. Bob sees something on Facebook he doesn't like. Bob scrolls past it. Be like Bob.
Okay, so I get that. But don't you think that if there is an injustice going on, whether it be the I Can't Breathe statement that some of the NBA players made wearing those t-shirts, whether it was Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the national anthem to protest police brutality in inner cities, whether it's Meryl Streep going on the stage at the Golden Globes and talking about Donald Trump and the crusade against the arts and the sciences that his platform is now contributing to, whether it's Greg Popovich or Steve Kerr in a press conference talking about how they fear for the future in the NBA especially, or even Tom Brady saying that you should put your political views aside if you have the opportunity to visit the White House as a champion. So don't you feel like when you're a celebrity or you're a professional athlete, it's your duty to use your platform to speak up and address issues that you feel are important to you? Nobody criticizes Ashton Kutcher when he goes in front of the Senate to talk about his charity and stopping children from being kidnapped and sold and trafficked, or Leonardo DiCaprio co-directing a 70-minute documentary on the National Geographic Channel about climate change. Don't you think that they have the right and it's their duty to talk about the issues as they see fit?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you have that voice, you're a prominent figure. And as you said, you know, people, you know, Ashton Kutcher's doing it, Leonardo DiCaprio's doing it. You know, they're using their prominence, using their voice to speak out because people will hear them and they should be heard because they have a voice. And, you know, if you don't agree with something, and especially these coaches, as you said, with Popovich and Kerr, you know, they have these voices. They're more respected people in the business, and you take them seriously, so let them use that voice.
Yeah, and I think we're in a slightly changing political climate here, right? Barack Obama is the first African-American president in United States history. He's a really down-to-earth, seemingly kind of guy, very personable, very likable, very funny, you know, policy issues aside. And it was a transition. You know, he played basketball. He was really into the NCAA tournament. He filled out a bracket, which Trump is not doing. We'll get to that in a little bit. But he made, you know, the highly minority-driven NBA almost, I feel like, feel more important because they had a president that was more like them. And I hate to use the us versus them mentality, but I think it's true in this case. So when Donald Trump gets elected, the NBA, who is mostly black or European or whatever, sees and feels the need to speak out on issues more, you know, publicly than, say, the NFL does. Do you agree with only speaking out in the negative sense, or do you think that it should have to go both ways? If you're going to say something negative, then you should have been out in the front of the camera saying something positive, or do you think that the only time that really you need to bring issues forward is when it's for the negative?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think if you're going to say something negative, you should say something positive, but we know how the media works. Negativity brings in readers and viewers, not positivity.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So if do you think that it's fair for them to speak out against, say, police brutality or to speak out against the Muslim ban, but not okay to say, I really like, you know, their tax plan? How do we feel about them saying something negative or disagreeing with something that is negative, but never really saying something positive? Do you think that it's fair? Do you think that it's okay? Arthur, where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I mean, I don't have too much of an issue with it being, if they're saying something negative. Something that, you know, really struck me and something that it's good to see that no matter what, even if it is positive, it's negative, it's good to see that these people are coming out and, you know, paying attention to the details and speaking on behalf of it, whether it is positive or negative. Everybody has an opinion, and it's, you know, I don't mind that they use their voice.
Okay, so let's talk about if the shoe was on the other foot, right? The Patriots win the Super Bowl. You know, there's the belief that, you know, every team is still going to hold the tradition that they're going to get to go to the White House and meet the president and whatnot, even though it's really hasn't been discussed in the realm of definitely going to happen. So you got guys like Martellus Bennett and I think Hightower, right? Said that I'm sorry?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, said that they definitely were not going to go to the White House if they were invited. Tom Brady, who is a known Donald Trump supporter, I think that's of note, has said that, you know, you should be able to put politics aside if you get invited to the White House. It's an honor. Do you think that it's a, you know, a privilege, a right, something that you are allowed to turn down, should just go just because? Fish, where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I think it is something that, you know, if you want to turn it down, you can. But I think Brady's right. Don't turn it down because of your political biases. If you need to turn it down because, you know, maybe there's a family matter that you have to attend to or something else that you have going on. But don't not go just because you don't like the president. I mean, you know, meeting the president, whether you like him or not, going to the White House is, well, unless you're the New England Patriots, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, you know, how many people can say, I visited the White House, I shook hands with the president? You know, he's not the most popular guy in the world, but he's the most powerful man in the world, and I got to shake his hand and say hi.
Now, let me flip that. Let's say the Falcons had won. You're Mohamed Sanu. You were born into a Muslim family. Where do you stand on that if he says, I don't want to go to the White House?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. That is a good one. Well, like I said, they have the right to turn it down. I just don't agree with the fact that they're turning it down because it is someone that they don't like. I mean, who knows? Maybe Mohamed Sanu would meet the president, have a nice conversation with him, and maybe, you know, strike a chord with Trump.
Highly unlikely, but...
highly unlikely, you're right.
I see, and I partially do agree with you, Fisher, in that it is a privilege, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. But I think that if you firmly believe and to your core feel so strongly as to not want to interact with Donald Trump or to support his policy, this is a nice, peaceful, quiet way where you're not bothering anybody by just saying, I respectfully decline to attend the White House ceremony for the fact that I disagree with your political point of view. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think it's bullshit that people are like, oh, you should put politics aside and go visit the White House just because Tim Thomas, when Boston, the Bruins won the Stanley Cup a few years ago when Barack Obama was the president, Tim Thomas refused to go. Refused. On politics specifically. So, yeah, he had a shorter-lived career. He was kind of ostracized for it, but he made it a very public thing. I vehemently disagree with Barack Obama's politics, so I am not going to go to the White House and meet him. And everybody, you know, made a big deal about it. A, it's a white guy refusing to meet a black guy, so of course the rumor mills of racism are swirling. But
of course,
the bottom line is if Martellus Bennett wants to quietly say, I don't, you know, want to go, you know, to the White House, I disagree with their policy, then I don't have a problem with that at all. Now, if he gets in front of the camera for a week straight bashing his teammates for going, then that's an issue. But if you just politely decline the invitation, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things, too. You know, Fisher hit it on the head, too. In the beginning of his statement, the part that I do agree with is, the offseason is not very long for these players. You know, some of these players, they go home to a wife. They're maybe expecting a child. You know, things could be going on, so you can turn that down. And I also agree with you, Danny, that it is a right. You have the right to say no and be respectful about it, not so much as you said. Don't go in front of the media for a whole week trying to bash your teammates or the idea of it. Just politely turn it down and use your voice when you can at the right time and respectfully.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's definitely a privilege. It's not necessarily a right. And it's not mandatory. And we live in a country where, especially on the Republican side, are all about their freedoms, right? They wanna own all their guns. They don't want background checks. They want this, they want that. So if a team decides to exercise its right to freedom of speech and speak out against somebody or choose not to go to the White House as an invitation, I don't see what the big deal is. But of course, there's always going to be somebody offended by everything somebody says.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about this new wave of White House policy and its impact on a diverse professional sports leagues that we have, and then going down to amateur leagues. Barack Obama became really like a champion of the average guy by doing average guy things all the time in the office, one of which was going with Andy Katz and filling out a bracket for the NCAA tournament before the tournament every single year. ESPN put it on TV. It was a big deal. Donald Trump has said he doesn't want to do it. He probably is afraid of the size of his hands holding a big magic marker on TV, but is Donald Trump just being a spiteful asshole saying that because Obama did this, I don't want to do this? You know, he'll come out and say, oh, my job is too important, I'm too busy to do this, but he'll probably be in Mar-a-Lago playing golf. So is Donald Trump an asshole for turning this down, or is this just like a who cares?
More of who cares. I don't think either side really needs the other. I don't think ESPN needs Donald Trump to keep its ratings. I think people are still going to tune into them for all their March Madness news and entertainment-wise. And at the same time, you know, Donald Trump doesn't exactly need ESPN to do it. Donald Trump can go somewhere else to do it. He can go to Fox Sports for all I care. I'm still not really going to hate the guy because he says, I don't want to fill in a bracket with you.
Fisher?
No, I agree completely. Now, here's my question. Is Donald Trump, did he say he's not going to fill out a bracket in general or just with ESPN?
You know, he just said that he wasn't going to do the ESPN. He declined to. I'm sure ESPN reached out to the White House and said, you know, do you want to do this year? You know, we'd love to, you know, have you back on, you know, have you on. And Donald Trump, I guess they said no. Now, I'm sure if his friends over at Fox News said, hey, do you want to fill out a bracket on our airs, he would probably say yes to please his base. I think it was just kind of like a quiet, no, I'm not going to do it this year, which I don't have a problem with. I don't need to see him on TV filling out a bracket. Would it be tremendous television? Yes. Would it be interesting to see what he said about teams and trying to act like he knows what he's talking about? Yes, it would be hilarious. But do I really honestly care about this? No, I think it's a non-starter issue.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think this is something that he needs to do, and I think people need to realize it's not something he needs to do. He's just invited to do it. He declined. Let's move on with our lives.
All right. I don't want to talk politics forever, but there's really a couple other things that I want to talk about here with regards to this kind of area. How do we think that these new policies of minority people or immigrants, they feel less important, or they feel like they're not welcomed? Do we see this affecting the future of people coming here to play sports at all? Because baseball is extremely diversified from a country's perspective. Hockey, yeah, it's a lot of European and Canadians, so that doesn't really get affected too much from this policy's perspective. Baseball, especially, I think, with the wide range of people that like to play it. Basketball, similarly, you get guys from random European countries or places like Turkey or South America. Do we see these new policies and viewpoints on minorities and immigrants as possibly a speed bump to gaining more international players across the sports world?
Initially, I want to say yes, just because if you feel that way, you feel unwelcomed. But really, there's been a lot of backlash from fans and people on Donald Trump's case about this. And really, that's the people who are paying for the tickets. They're the ones showing up and supporting you. And really, at the end of the day, too, if you are a top-tier player and your best opportunity is here, you're going to make the most money here. You're going to have the best path to really showcase your talents here in America compared to some of these other countries.
Fisher?
No, I think Arthur hit the nail on the head. America is the land of opportunity. It's the land where people have their eyes on you in sports. I mean, not saying that's not the case in other countries, but here, where there's so much more to do in the world of sports, you'll definitely have a bigger fan base and make that cha-ching to support your family.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, money talks, right? Doesn't it, Arthur?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look in baseball. As you said, baseball is out of the core four sports leagues. It is probably the most diverse. And the example would be, look at the Cuban players that are coming over. They risk their lives. They risk the security of their families to come to America and use their talents and get paid for it. So hopefully one day they can be reunited with their families and support them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, especially with Cuban-born players, with the whole opening up of Cuba-U.S. relations with Obama like 6 months ago, I think everybody really thought there was going to be more of an influx of Cuban-born players that didn't necessarily have to defect, but rather be openly allowed to come play in the United States. But it just seems like with Trump's policies and this America First and closed borders, I feel like there's going to be a couple of maybe sort of high-value basketball or baseball players that are just going to say, whoa, 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 I don't think so. I don't think I want to come there at this moment. It's toxic to be an immigrant in the United States.
Yeah, that very well could happen, especially, and as you said, right now, they could be young players. They could, sign a contract to stay home for a few more years, see how it goes in the United States, and then make their decision from there.
All right. I think that's enough politics for one podcast for us. Let's move on a little bit. With the weather, as beautiful as it is today, pitchers and catchers are reporting it feels like spring is closer than ever. So baseball season is upon us. Some of the big news that came out over the week, first and foremost, the Vegas odds to win the World Series came out. They got, the Cubs are obviously the favorites. The Indians have the best odds preseason that they've ever had. The Red Sox odds look pretty good. What do we see in these Vegas odds? How much stock do you put into these before, the whole teams report to spring training, before anybody even sees a live pitch? You don't know the injury status of some guys. How much stock do you put into these preseason Vegas odds?
Well, it's like anything, really. These are way too early predictions. You know, like you said, nobody's thrown a pitch. Nobody's hit a ball yet. No one's, you know, made it to first base yet. It's just the fun of the off season that people just do to, you know, get themselves ready, get themselves hyped up. I wouldn't really look into these too much. Being the non baseball fan I am, you guys know this a lot better than I do. But I think it's just fun right now. You know, get you ready.
Arthur, could you ever see yourself putting down? Now, imagine we aren't like broke post-college students that have real life expenses. Could you ever imagine yourself taking those preseason odds and just saying, you know what, I'm going to take a chance and throw a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars on a preseason bet before the odds really start to change?
Not really, no. I can't really say. It's way too early, as you said. Nobody's thrown a pitch. And you never know. It always seems like one of those teams always has one of their star players go injured. And I know that a lot of this is based off of, okay, on their roster, on paper, they have some of the best talent in the league. I personally could not, because when was the last time someone's repeated it in the World Series?
The Yankees.
Okay, so would you really throw hundreds of dollars down on the Cubs to repeat? I wouldn't, especially when people are coming after you. How do you respond, kind of thing?
Yeah, I can agree with that, and I don't think any of us are really any big gamblers, so we don't really feel the urge and the tickle to want to the urge to scratch that itch, I guess you could say, and put money down on this. But like, if I thought that the Yankees could be serious dark horses, and I saw them at Vegas odds starting the year at 25-1 or 50-1 to win the World Series, I might consider taking a chance.
Well, according to an article here from NJ.com, if you want to do that, they said go ahead and do that with the Kansas City Royals and the Seattle Mariners. They both have 33-1 odds. So, just some food for thought for you.
Yeah, like I think you'd have to really believe in your team, get amazing preseason odds before they maybe start off real hot and the odds start to come down a little bit. Get your money in and see if you can get a return on your investment, but be prepared to lose the money. I mean, at the end of the day, when you bet, you have to be prepared to lose the money. But let's talk really quick. Let's talk AL East for a second. Jared Carrabas, the baseball blogger for Barstool, has been nonstop gloating about the pitching rotation that the Red Sox have. One guy has never pitched in the playoffs. One guy has had one good year in his entire career, and one guy is one of the worst postseason pitchers of all time. But Red Sox fans are all giddy. They've all got quarter chubs over this rotation. Arthur, where do we see the Red Sox as potential World Series threats?
Early season, I would put them probably second best. I still think Cleveland has a little bit of a better roster. And some talent there in Cleveland. But I understand. I know why, you know, they're early favorites there because, as you said, the pitching staff, for the most part in postseason, is unproven. But it's one of those that if the Yankees had that rotation, I think you and I would be gloating too. But they also do have some up-and-coming players, including Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts. And I look for them to win the AL East this year. But then versus Cleveland, it's going to be a good race there in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Fisher, I don't know how much you've seen of the Red Sox so far, because I know we're just getting out of football season, so you're probably now in, like, vacation mode.
Until March Madness, yes.
But, I mean, like, these Red Sox pitchers are some of the worst postseason pitchers that are great regular season pitchers I've ever seen in one collective group. Do I think they could win the AL East by a landslide? Yes. But do I think they could ever win the World Series? Not with this pitching staff. Not until David Price learns how to pitch post-September. So I don't know if I can really buy into the Red Sox hype. Now, of course, everybody in Beantown is all about, you know, talking the shit, walking the walk, whatever. But do you really buy into this? These guys with no postseason experience, little postseason experience, or just shitty postseason records can really be a top-notch World Series contender?
Well, you never know until you find out. And I don't know if we'll find out this season. I think you're right. The lack of experience will really come into play once September and October roll around. But if it's something that, like you said, they don't have that experience this year, you know, coming together as a team, that's something that they can easily gel within the next season or two. But I'm sitting here and I'm looking, you know, I'm just reading a preview here on FoxSports.com about the Boston Red Sox. And, you know, I'm seeing like a lot of people that they lost in the offseason. You know, David Ortiz retired. Lost a couple bit of pitchers to free agency. Ryan Hannigan went to the Phillies. You know, Johan Moncada went to the White Sox. You know, like I said, quite a bit of guys that they lost over the offseason. And I don't see a lot of really big key free agent signings as of right now. But we'll see if any trades or other signings happen within the coming months.
Arthur, you think Chris Sale going from a top probably two pitcher in the American League in a pitcher-friendly ballpark like Chicago, I think, what is it, U.S. Cellular Fields? I don't even know what it's called anymore. Now a very hitter-friendly ballpark in Boston. Do you think that he takes a step back here? New team, new city, new home ballpark. I don't know. I don't know if I buy into the Sale hype right now.
I mean, you bring up good points, you know, new surroundings and new team. So the chemistry, he's going to have to, you know, essentially a month to kind of prepare for that. But I think maybe he has a rough start, rough go of things in the beginning. But I he's such a good pitcher. He's not so much, okay, he's going to hit 98 and he'll get it by you. He's one of those that he knows just where to place the ball. And yeah, he had a huge strikeout rate 2 years ago. And last year he said, I was tired in September because of that, and I, you know, worked on my accuracy. So if he can keep that up, I think he'll be just fine. It's one of those things, like, if you can put the ball where you want it and get these hitters to hit over the top of it to your second baseman, you're going to be fine no matter where you pitch.
Fisher, last question on the Red Sox. Does David Price ever get over his postseason woes?
Well, I feel like if there's one team that he can do it with, it might be the Boston Red Sox, just because I know you guys are like the furthest thing from Boston Red Sox fans. So why in the world would the baseball gods smile upon you two?
Arthur?
I think so. I think
like he's, you know, too good of a pitcher. He's too good of a pitcher to be this bad his entire career in the postseason, right? I mean,
I agree. And I think a lot of it is because he puts so much pressure on himself as a number one guy. So maybe bringing in someone like Chris Sale, who, okay, let's slot him number one. He, again, never pitched in the playoffs. Who knows? But maybe some of that takes the pressure off. He pitched well when he came out of the bullpen for Tampa Bay when they went to the World Series. So maybe it is just the head games that he's playing with himself as the number one guy.
Very possible. Let's talk about the AL East rivals, the Yankees. I think everybody started to think this was going to be a transition year for them. Develop some of the younger guys, get ready for 2018, get ready for 2019. And that's where they would really start to make a push in the playoffs. But they're still making moves to be competitive. Cashman still expects them to be competitive. They go out, they sign they bring back Aroldis Chapman. They bring in Tyler Clippard. They bring in Chris Carter, a power right-handed bat. They're younger, but they've still got some age with Headley, with Ellsbury. Where do we see the outlook on the Yankees? Now, I don't know if they can compete with the Red Sox in the AL East, but we could be looking at a wild card team. Arthur, I mean, what's the realistic expectation for the Yankees here?
I'm not expecting too much this year. I know that people are like, well, they could be a wild card team. I really don't think so. I think you have unproven young guys, and even the ones that have been around, these aging veterans, Chase Headley, Jacoby Ellsbury, Brett Gardner, they're playing subpar to be nice. And so really, if you're relying on these guys who have been mediocre at best to carry the team and help these young guys develop, we're in for a long season.
Do you think if the Yankees are competitive-ish by the All-Star break and they've got some guys raking in the minor leagues that maybe aren't ready for the pros, but they're, you know, the Yankees are in a position where if they needed an extra bat, could you see them bringing up guys like Clint Frazier real early you know, where maybe you were looking at 2018 for him, but 2017 he's hitting 350 in the minors, and the Yankees need another bat.
You very well could, and something to I think by the end of the year, a lot of these younger guys are gonna be in the Bronx, you know, trying to start up their career. But also, don't be surprised if the Yankees are having a good season out of someone like Matt Holliday to go trade him for some even more younger pieces, because I think that's where the Yankees are going right now. They just don't have anywhere to put these young guys. But if they are struggling, especially Chase Headley, Jacoby Ellsbury, they're going to see a lot more playing time, I think.
Fisher, I think that last year, one of the biggest problems the Yankees had was consistent starting pitching. You got Masahiro Tanaka coming off some arm issues. Michael Pineda, you never know if he's going to be healthy or just can throw strikes. And you got CeCe Sabathia, who's probably 100 years old and 500 pounds. Is the Yankees pitching staff good enough to make it to the playoffs this year?
Well, it's a very good question. You're right. It's gonna be a lot about pitching here. And even Fox Sports, they have their headline here about their pitching. The rotation has more questions than a 4-year-old. I know CC, who I'm very familiar with. He had a really good 2016 season, but that seems to be his agenda. You know, he's hot one day, he's cold the next. He's hot one day, he's cold the next. He'll have a really good season one year, and then the next year he'll be down and out. I'm really going to be looking at him this year, just because, like you said, he's older than the dinosaurs, so a lot of guys depend on him. A lot of guys really look up to him. As far as can the pitching get into the playoffs, I'm going to say they may knock on the door, but no one's going to answer.
Arthur, I know that we've talked about the hype of their bullpen last year. They had the big three on the back end, but they just couldn't get them the ball with the lead. And I think that really came down to starting pitching. But they bring back, you know, they bring back Chapman, who struggled in the tail end of the year in the World Series. They win arbitration with Betances, and more drama that Levine is bringing the team. So they've got a solid, and then now they have Tyler Clippard as well. They have a solid back end of the pitching staff. But I mean, again, are they going to get them the ball with the lead to a chance to close out these games?
That remains the biggest question. You know, what CC Sabathia are we going to see? Are we going to see the CC that pitched phenomenally at the end of the season, or are we going to see the same CC that we saw for the 12 months prior to that? And, you know, one of the biggest questions, you know, people are like, oh, I'm on the outlook. I want to see how these young guys look in spring training. I really think that's a poor sampling. It's 4 weeks. You're not really going to see the best because they're pulled out by the third inning or they're put in the sixth inning. So I'm really looking to see, how does Masahiro Tanaka rebound? You know, elbow injuries in the past have hurt him, but he's got great. And when healthy, there's really maybe he's in the top five pitchers. And so I'm really curious to see how does he rebound, but I don't think that this team is going to, you know, give these guys the lead as we saw last year. I think it's going to be a lot of the same. Too many question marks.
All right. So the Yankees, despite their woes on the field, they've had some woes now off the field. Betances and Levine thing, going through arbitration, I think the Yankees were going to say whatever they needed to say to the arbiter in order to win their side of the case. So I'm not really sure why Betances is super angry at this whole thing. What are the comments a little out of line? Were they being kind of an asshole? Yeah. But I mean, if you're in a trial, right? If you're in negotiations, you're going to say what you want to say so that you win the argument. No?
You are. And as you said, you know, he's angry. He's not angry at the panel's decision. He's angry about Levine's comments afterwards. That's really what got him sour, and I don't blame him.
No, I don't disagree. And I think that, you know, Levine was way out of line with what he said, especially after the whole thing was said and done. It was completely unnecessary. But, you know, does this sour relations? I mean, Betances, I didn't realize, was as old as he is. Are we looking at a temporary solution and then letting him go?
I think his contract's up in, what, 2020?
Something like that.
I think that's what I think, you know, hopefully by then things will be over. But really, his numbers are just sensational as a relief pitcher. And in this day and age, you know, baseball's evolved. You and I, we talk about this all the time. His numbers coming out of the bullpen are sensational since 2014. And hopefully this mends things because he is a big piece to the Yankees.
In other news, Fisher, I don't know if you read what Goose Gosch had to say. Somebody who was quite overrated in his time, really went after Mariano Rivera for no reason. And just saying how the game basically has gone soft and one inning relievers can't really be the greatest of all time. And Mariano Rivera is not the greatest relief pitcher of all time, which is a lie. I mean, how out of line? I mean, we can all agree Goose Gosch was way out of line here. I mean, was it even necessary to say what he said?
No, absolutely not. Why would you single out Mariano Rivera? I mean, even non-Yankees fans will agree he's one of, if not the greatest closers of all time.
So no, I don't know why he's making he's the greatest closer of all time.
Well, there Period. You go. Like I said, so I don't understand why he's making him out to be the GOAT. I mean, how often do players get, you know, like, let's see, what was it? Didn't the Boston Red Sox give Mariano Rivera a chair made out of baseball bats as like a farewell?
Was it him or Jeter?
I think it was to Mariano with some team did.
With oh, the broken Mariano's bats, the broken bats, bat. The broken bats.
Yeah. I mean, how what teams do that for a relief pitcher? No one, not to my.
Arthur, what about you? Where do you sit on this?
I think Goose Gosch just has a big mouth. And
I mean, this isn't the first time he's gone out of his way to criticize the Yankees.
No, it's even like, once I saw the story, I tweeted, another year, same Goose Gosch. And you're right, he's always reaching out and, you know, taking the initiative that people seem to care what he has to say. And really, nobody at the end of the day does. And 10 out of 10 times, I would take Mariano Rivera on my team over Goose Gosch.
Yeah,
some guys just need to find a way to get back in the spotlight.
Yeah, you know, it's who knows. But, I mean, it was way, way out of line. You know, just it kind of breaks the Yankees code, right? They never really – you never hear any former Yankees, with the exception of Goose Gosch, speaking ill about any current or other former Yankee. It's kind of like that, you know – once a Yankee, always a Yankee, speak highly of each other type of brotherhood that he's really kind of, you know, stepped away from here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You sound like you're going to say something.
Go ahead.
Speaking of spring training here, I actually want to get your opinion, Danny. I know there's a lot going on in New York. There's, as we touched the AL East, what is a headline outside of the Bronx that you're looking for this year in spring training? Something that may be answered or something that can go a long way?
I think it's a similar story to what it was last year. What is this Mets rotation going to be like? You know, Wheeler is back being hurt again. You know, you got Mats, you got DeGrom, you got Syndergaard, you got Harvey. They're all back. They've re-signed Cespedes. The story, I think, becomes on paper, they are the best rotation, hands down, in the entire major leagues, and they underperformed significantly last year. What changes and what improvements are made on their end this year?
That's fair. Do you have any, Fisher?
In the New York area or just anything?
Anything major leagues.
Anything major leagues? Let's see. What are the Phillies going to do? The Phillies have been kind of the laughing stock of professional baseball for a little bit. Do you think they come out of that basement and show that they're a team to be reckoned with, or are they going to continue to be a joke?
Continue to be a joke. Next question.
There you go.
Yeah.
Coming from a true Philadelphia hater.
Oh, it's true. They just they haven't done anything to get better.
Yeah, they have some pieces, but they're not going to be Major League Baseball ready in 2017. They're in full rebuild mode. And one of the best things that ever happened to them was Ryan Howard. Finally, his contract was over. So now the Phillies can, you know, go into the future and hope for the best. But to answer my own question, I actually think the Diamondbacks right now, you know, there's some people, there's particular players, I won't like Bryce Harper, how does he rebound? Clayton Kershaw's health. But Diamondbacks last year, there's a lot of praise once they got Greinke. Now they're in year two of this. They well underperformed. Do they rebound this year, or is what just one big hoopla about it?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a couple of intriguing storylines out west. The Mariners are significantly improved and seem to be getting better every year, although they're always forgotten about because they're in the Pacific Northwest. I think the Dodgers kind of had a quietly good year last year and then made a little bit of noise in the playoffs. So I think that the entire NL and AL Wests together are quite interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, the AL West, I too look at the Angels because you have some good talent there, but you haven't been able to do anything with it. And can you kind of be playoff contenders this year?
Yeah, I agree. All right, that's all I've got. You guys got anything else before we get out of here?
No, sir. Go enjoy your game.
I will. Everybody hates the Capitals. It is not their year, no matter what anybody says. It is not the Capitals' year. All right, for episode 41, till next time.